You're listening to Project Outbreak. For the next 6 weeks, we'll be bringing you six cycles of original plays written, directed, designed, and performed by artists in isolation to support artists in our community. Find out more at pandemiccollective.org. This is Cycle 1, Code Spooky. For our first story, we bring you The Lights of Lock End.
Gregor Campbell, The Urban Telegraph. It's March 15th, 11:30 a.m. I've just arrived at Lock End. I've a meeting with Mr. and Mrs. McGill, the old couple at Bona Lighthouse. They reached out to the paper after we published an article last week covering recent supposed sightings of the infamous monster of Loch Ness near their home. Multiple visitors to the Loch have shared similar stories. They seem interested in sharing their experiences as the sole occupants of the lighthouse for the past 40-odd years. Could make for a fun companion piece to last week's article. The McGills have graciously invited me along this morning to talk on the condition that just I come as the sole representative of the paper for a written interview. Cut tape.
Who is it?
Una McGill. It's Gregor Campbell from the Urban Telegraph.
Mr. Campbell, there you are. A pleasure. We were worried you got lost in the rain. Please come in. Warm yourself up.
Thank you for inviting me into your lovely home, Mrs. McGill.
Oh, it's our pleasure to have you, my dear lad. Douglas and I don't get visitors very often. We figured this would be a nice change of pace. We're always up for a chat. Can I take your jacket for you?
Please.
I was just about to put the kettle on for Douglas. Would you like some, Mr. Campbell?
Yes, please. Where is Douglas, by the way?
En gathered round the fire, reading that book of his. You go warm up, and I'll be in with the tea.
Hello? Mr. McGill? I'm Gregor Campbell from the newspaper. I've come to talk with you and your wife. If you have a moment away from reading, we could chat now. You invited me because of an article we published. Do you remember it? About the Loch Ness monster sightings. Do you mind if I record our conversation here today? I know you both requested we don't make a big spectacle out of the interview, so I figured we'd forgo the usual recording account from a in favour of a tape deck. Is that okay, Mr. McGill? Can you hear me? Very well. How about you just let me know if you want me to stop the tape at any point, alright? Gregor Campbell, Urban Telegraph, Tape 1. Does that work for you, Mr. McGill?
Isn't it?
So, you said that you and Una have lived here at Bona Lighthouse for just over 40 years. Do you maintain and run the lighthouse yourselves? Or do you not get that many ships through the lock anymore? Well, in response to our article on the recent sightings of the Loch Ness Monster, specifically near the lighthouse here, I've prepared some questions for you. Or if you had any sort of interesting experiences of your own to share. Obviously, all the historic sightings have been debunked as nothing but hoaxes, but there's been an odd resurface in reports in the last few months. Any say on the matter? Mr. McGill, anything you yourself may have seen out of the ordinary? Anything interesting in that book of yours? Fiction? Non-fiction? Mind if I look? Oh, my apologies. I didn't mean to interrupt your reading. End tape. It's fine, Douglas. We can save the questions for later.
The lights of Lock End call them here. The lights of Lock End.
I'm sorry. What was that? Air. How about I go help Una with the tea, and then we can pick this up when I get back? Hello?
Oh! Mr. Campbell, you startled me.
Sorry. Just came over to lend a hand.
Oh, my dear. You didn't have to do that. I've got it taken care of. Don't you go and worry about me.
Mrs. McGill, is everything all right with Douglas?
Oh? Did you two have a chat, did you?
Well, I was the one doing most of the chatting.
What did you say to him?
Just asking about the lighthouse, the lock, all that. He seemed quite rather dead set on avoiding my questions.
Oh, that's Douglas for you. Always stubborn. Well, not always, I should say. To be frank, Mr. Campbell, he hasn't been himself. Recently.
What do you mean? How recently?
To be perfectly honest, well, 23 years ago he... Well, we were perfectly fine here for a while. Business as usual. At some point, Douglas just started acting a bit off. I don't know what's got into him.
23 years? Mrs. McGill, that sounds very serious. Have you not taken him to a doctor?
Oh, no, no. No doctors.
Was there a point that you noticed a shift in his behaviour?
I recall he had just gotten back from one of his fishing trips. Douglas would go out to sea with a couple of the other gentlemen from the town. They'd be gone for a week or so at a time. 1 week gone, 1 week back, on and on. Well, one day, midwinter, Douglas came back and he was totally unresponsive, just as you've seen him. I'm sorry, I should have warned you about him. He doesn't intend to come across as rude, I assure you.
Were the other men who went with him acting the same?
There were no others that came back, Mr. Campbell. Douglas was the only one on the boat when it docked. He wouldn't speak to anyone of what happened out on the waters. Not even to me.
He did speak. To me, that is. Just a moment ago. Mentioned something about the lights of Lock End.
Did he know? What did he say about these lights?
Simply said, the lights of Lock End call them here. What lights was he referring to? Just prior to that, I asked him about the recent sightings from around the lighthouse.
The recent sightings of what, my dear lad?
Of the Loch Ness Monster.
Oh, good! The tea is done. Mr. Campbell, be a dear and help me carry the cups out to Douglas. Douglas, tea is ready.
The lights to call. The lights they come. They call them forth. They call them from.
Douglas, put up that silly book and have your tea before it gets cold. He just will not put that thing down. Mr. Campbell, would you pour Douglas's tea?
Of course. And then, if we could get back to the interview, I'd very much like to continue on.
Oh, of course. Pardon my bad manners. Go right ahead, Mr. Campbell. You've been most patient.
Thank you. Mind if I record this? Just a portable recorder. Nothing extravagant like you asked.
Oh, well. Yes, I'm sure that will be quite all right. Just know I'm not the most poised speaker, Mr. Campbell. Promise you'll make me sound more elegant in the art of...
Of course. Gregor Campbell. Tape 1. Mrs. McGill, you asked me here today to talk with you, I assume in regards to an article we published on sightings of the so-called Loch Ness Monster. which have been reported near your home. Do you have any sort of experiences or sightings of your own you'd like to share?
Well, that's the thing, Mr. Campbell. Douglas and I personally find all the talk of monsters a bit ridiculous, to be honest. We've lived here for years and never once seen anything out of the ordinary like that. Nothing at all. A bunch of silly stories that have been around for decades. Started by a children's overactive imagination, most likely.
What about Douglas, then?
What about him?
Has he seen anything out of the ordinary? Perhaps he should speak for himself. What do you say, Douglas? Mrs. McGill, I'm not quite sure why you've asked me here, if you've nothing more to say. I was under the impression you had more to contribute on the topic of the monster sightings.
Well, I'm sorry, dear lad. I didn't mean to waste your time. I was just interested in chatting.
Well, Mrs. McGill, if that's the case, I would at very least be interested in hearing more about you, and very interested in hearing about Douglas. In my previous attempts at speaking to your husband, I had asked him about your lighthouse. Is it still in operation?
Yes, very much so. We are one of two lighthouses along the lock here. We still light the lantern on days when visibility out on the water is low.
Is your lighthouse the lights of Loch Inn that Douglas was speaking of?
Mr. Campbell, again, I'm not quite sure how to comment on that. Douglas speaks to himself on occasion. A bad habit that's grown more constant in his old age, it seems.
Well, don't you find it all a bit strange that he started acting this way when he returned from that fishing trip, alone, I might add?
Mr. Campbell, I'd very much rather we drop the topic. It's a very personal matter. I shouldn't have brought it up, honestly. Douglas is unwell. Leave it at that.
I'm just trying to understand, that's all. He keeps mentioning the lights of Loch Inn call them here. Who is them?
I haven't the faintest idea what he means by any of that, Mr. Campbell. We should leave him be.
And what of that book of his? You know, earlier, he refused to let me look at it. Is it possible he's simply reading aloud a passage of that book?
Mr. Campbell, I think it's time you be leaving. Douglas, sit down. Look, you've dropped your teacup.
Must light the way. Light the way. They come at once. They come today.
Douglas, now is not the time for this.
Mrs. McGill, what is going on here?
Oh, Douglas, is this the only way?
I've the feeling you know more about what's going on here than you've let up.
Douglas has gone to light the lantern, is all. He must have forgotten to this morning. No need to fear.
I'm getting the impression that there's more to this lighthouse than just guiding a few wayward boats.
I'm so sorry we invited you here. I'm so sorry to burden you with all this. Here. You can take Douglas's book now. Everything is explained in there. Go ahead. Open it.
Mrs. McGill, I don't understand. What am I looking at?
Everything.
What language is this book written in? I don't recognise it. It just appears to be random scrawlings. Hang on. There's something wrong with my tape recorder.
No. There's nothing wrong with it. That's them. To whom the light calls, the lights of Loch End call them here.
Una! My dear Una, is that you?
Douglas? My Douglas! It's really you!
What has happened?
Mr. Campbell took it. He's taken the book. It is now.
Una, Douglas, what's going on? What's happening?
That book, Mr. Campbell. On that fateful fishing trip so many years ago, I found that book out at sea. Or should I say, it found me. By some divine providence, I retrieved it from its watery grave. I opened it, and its words, they filled my mind. An unknown language. It took over me. The other man, well, it drove them mad. Caused the others to drown themselves. They all walked overboard. But it needed me. It knew me from the lighthouse here. It knew I could light the way for them from the deep seas, from the vast reaches of space where they slept.
Light the way for who?
For the ancients. The gods who created our universe. They've since slumbered, but once awoken, they are guided back here to claim what is theirs. Immense, terrible monsters.
Of Loch Ness?
Yes, my boy. Even he. And he resides here. The first we called forth, and he is but the first that waits for many others. Una! My dear, he has arrived. Open the windows, open the doors. We must welcome him. Hello, old boy. Welcome home.
Hello, dear Nessie.
Fear not, old boy. We must take our leave, but Mr. Campbell will be the lights that guide your way.
What do you mean?
Now you and he wait. You will guide them now, Gregor. The book's your key, the light's your guide. They are all on their way now.
The lighthouse guiding?
Yes. The burden is now yours.
We...
Una, we are free. Mr. Campbell has saved us.
Thank you, dear lad. Oh, thank you.
We...
Thank you!
Thank you!
We...
The lights of Loch Inn lead the way. Come forth, our gods. They come today. The lights of Loch Inn lead the way. Come forth, our gods. They come today.
The Lights of Loch End, written by Trevor Hazel, directed by Paul Jaquith. The voice of Gregor Campbell was Royce Rosewood. The voice of Una McGill was Aaron Bell. The voice of Douglas McGill was Dan O'Neill. Sound design and editing by Lindsay Wagner. Our next story is The House.
I'm sitting in my childhood bedroom. The room is smaller than it was. It's been getting smaller for some time, and yet I haven't gotten up and left while I can still fit through the door. I was sitting in my childhood bedroom when it will be smaller than it is. This confuses no one more than me. The door is there, at the foot of the twin bed with its threadbare jungle-themed covers. My body won't seem to move, even though I know I need it to. It's like some chemical has crept into me through the yellow wallpaper glue that is visible near the speckled ceiling. There's probably a name for the construction technique that gives the ceiling that weird texture of cottage cheese frozen in mid-drip. but I don't know what it is. I never moved as a child. This beige house with its perpetually overgrown bushes blocking the big bay window downstairs from letting any light is the only home I've ever known. As a child, I couldn't understand why other kids would have their address written on their arms. Couldn't they remember? Couldn't they find their way home? I could remember the look of surprise on my parents' face as they called the police, brows furrowed, having to explain. Yes, I had walked home from downtown. Yes, they would be punishing me for wasting police time. Yes, they were sorry.
We'll talk to them. Don't worry. We'll talk to them.
They were almost as confused how I had found a way home as they were mad at me for losing them. Almost. It was a strange way to find out not everyone had a fifth cardinal direction on their eternal compass. Not everyone had the gravitational pull home like I did. Do. We'll have. My bag is laying next to me. The black wheelie suitcase jammed with all the last minute additions. Bits of laundry and books zipped in haphazardly, all patiently waiting for my hand to lift it and take it away from here. The door. The door is at chin height, I think. Maybe. If I stood up, I'd know, but I just look at the door and, yeah, I think if I stood chin height, the animals hiding in the wrinkled pattern of the bedspread look up at me, placid and content, and smelling like dust. A wide-eyed cartoonish leopard seems to smile through an old stain, maybe soda, that splits the face in half. The smile half obscured by transparent blackness. This house is not, for all its problems, like one of those catastrophically filthy houses you see on shows for middle-class housewives to gawk at the mentally unstable who, unsupported by systems and relations around them, pack themselves so tightly. With things upon expiring, they have no room to fall down dead. This house is practically barren by those standards unless you count emotional baggage. At a dinner party? Years from now, I will ask an architect, how much emotional baggage can you fit in a mid-century colonial? Enough to die standing up. I alone will crack up, and the room will awkwardly sip their dry Merlot and nibble at the edges of canopies. If I left now, I could reenact the first level of the limbo at Skate City as I pass through the door frame. The floor creaks as I put my feet on the boards. The whole place is haunted. Or might as well be, for all the noises it would make to scare a small child on a midnight snack run. Maybe the ghosts who ate all the sadness, gorged themselves on the death of this place, are laying on top of me. And that is why I can't seem to leave. Or maybe it is the house itself. Now missing the couple that had fed its bleak walls for so long. Now the house is closing its teeth around me. It will strike me as a contrapositive of Montresor from the cask of Amontillado walling up Fortunato. The house will simply squeeze in on me until I am encased in the grime and faded off white paint of the drywall. Mummified for some eldritch archaeologist to uncover. I can touch the ceiling without standing. I'll have to turn the suitcase on its side to get it through the door, or leave it behind. Perhaps now, in the final moments, as I leap toward the last escape from the super encumbered place of ghosts, I can leave the suitcase, leave the baggage, and...
The House, written by Charles Ewing, directed by Catelyn Seavey, voiced by James Brunt. The final song was Machina by Scott Buckley. You can find more of his music at soundcloud.com/Scott Buckley. Sound design and editing by Veronica Straitlingo. For our third story, we bring you Death's Love.
Again, here. I have been here before. There are actually little places I have not been, but I am sure you know that. I am not exactly a foreign concept to you. For years you have wondered about me, despised me, thought about how we would meet. And for all your years, months, days, hours, and on sparse occasions, minutes of rumination and living, I am never quite how you imagined me. It almost hurts. The disappointment in most forgotten souls' eyes as I visit them. I visit. Not God or Krishna, Allah or Jesus. I think that's the source of disappointment. This is not the first one from this room. There's John with the scared eyes and shaky hands. Catherine, who didn't utter a word until I showed her where to go. She was one of the few to tell me goodbye. Jason, whose only concern was his mother's grief. David, who moved on as fast as he could. Stella, with electric blue eyes. Armando, who was wearing a cashmere sweater. Brittany, who missed Jacob. Little Casey, it wasn't her time. Beatrice, who wouldn't stop praying. Anna, who was supposed to be fine after her surgery. Sarah, who hugged me. Jared, he was rude. I remember them. I remember them all. And those were only the ones in this room, not the room next door or the rest of the hospital and the world. And now another. Lillian. Cancer. Another face, another one to remember, another pound of weight on my heart. You are ready?
I am dead.
I think you have that answer.
I am. Looks like I lost that battle, finally.
You are ready?
What a stupid question to ask.
Interesting.
What?
Continue.
You know I am not ready. What cancer patient wants to die?
You are correct.
So why would you ask?
Think of it as a formality and emotion of respect. There isn't much to say.
Say that you're sorry.
For what?
That I am dead.
I have always found it bittersweet when people talk. People, not souls, people is humanizing. My charges often choose to think of me as a vindictive power, that I choose when it is their time. I normally let them believe that. They most of the time have no idea that I do not wish the end of their life. It is not my choice. If I had it my way, no one would ever die, and I would merely wander from one side of this giant rock to the other. But I can't. If I wander, I feel compelled to walk towards my next customer, and so I help them move on. I help them find the peace I haven't yet. The peace I gave up. I know the next part is coming. When they speak, it always happens, they ask.
So, is God real?
I don't know.
What?
I don't know.
You have to know.
I do.
You are here for a reason. Are you taking me to him?
I don't know.
Oh. Well, that's disappointing.
I'm sorry. It was for me, too.
So, where are we going?
To your spot.
My spot? What?
Your spot. Where you move on.
Which is where?
Questions are hard. I want to have answers. I am supposed to have answers. I am the first one they see. The spot. That's what I call it. It's just a spot. It changes with each person. A doorway, a tile, a chair. I guess it's whatever they need it to be. But trying to say that, explaining it that way, never ends well. So, I just point. Right there.
Oh.
Yes.
Then what happens?
You move on.
And you don't know where?
I do not.
Not yet.
Okay.
It's nice not to feel sick anymore.
Is it?
Yes. Cancer did not agree with me.
It rarely does.
I have decided I am not going. I'm not going to that spot.
Okay.
That's it?
What is?
You aren't going to tell me to go to that spot.
It is not my job to tell you what to do. I find it easier to just give you an option.
Do people often stay?
No. Almost never.
You?
Yes.
Why don't people stay?
There's nothing to stay for.
What is there to go for?
I don't know. I have never been.
Yeah?
Yes.
I still am not going to go.
I heard you. I am not going to make you, Lillian.
Good.
May I?
May you what? What?
May I go to your spot? By the window?
Why?
I want to. I want to go.
Oh. Okay. Go.
Yes. I think I will. You know that once I take your place, you cannot move on, not until...
Okay.
I knew you would.
How?
I had polio and talked to death once, too. You had the same look as I did. The same feeling of injustice. May I? It's been a long time coming.
Please? Wait.
Yes?
What do I get from you? I am giving you my spot. What do I get?
My love. You will need it. As the years go on and on, as more people pass, as you remember them all, when it gets hard, when you try to quit, you will find your way. We all did. I am also giving you your time. The time you want. Goodbye. I love you. I will be waiting for you. We will be waiting for you.
Death's Love, written by Alexander Fish, directed by Annie Sand. The voice of Lillian was Miranda Ireland. The voice of Death was Vin Ernst. Original music composition, sound design, and editing by Rihanna DeVries. You're listening to Project Outbreak. We'll be bringing you 5 more cycles of plays, each based on a particular theme. If you enjoy what you're hearing, like the Pandemic Collective Facebook page to get updates. We're also raising funds to support theater professionals in our community. Go to pandemiccollective.org for more information.
And now it's time for everyone's favorite cat. It's Doodles and the Apocalypse!
You've got how many tigers right now?
I have 226.
So you're spending $750,000 feeding your tiger?
Just feeding. Dad!
Dad!
Doodles, what is it? I'm trying to work remotely because of the virus. You're in the way.
You're not working. You're watching Netflix.
What do you want, you crazy cat?
I'm hungry, Dad. Can I have some more pellets?
No, Doodles. I can't give you more pellets. You just had breakfast.
But you're eating all of your rations.
God, we're both going to be 400 pounds at the end of this.
Come on, Dad. Just one salmon treat.
All right, Doodles. Just one salmon treat.
Thank you.
At this rate, we're going to run out of food.
Dad? Should I be worried? Is society about to collapse?
Don't worry, Doodles. If society breaks down, I promise I won't eat you.
Dad, if society breaks down, I'm definitely going to eat you.
Love you, Doodles.
Love you, Dad. For now.
Doodles, did you just say something? I need to talk to another human.
Doodles and the Apocalypse by Peter Nemenoff, directed by Lauren Michelle Long. The voice of the man was Frankie Millington. The voice of Doodles was Amy Elizabeth Gray. Original music composition, sound design, and editing by Aaron Dupuy. And to close our opening cycle, we bring you It's Okay, You're Not Okay.
These are extraordinary times, and I don't say that as a compliment, necessarily. It's not said with Spielbergian awe, but rather with a kind of bamboozled dread, as if you come upon a strange hole in the ground full of old-timey baby dolls, you know, the creepy haunted ones. You'd say, that's extraordinary. And you wouldn't mean it in a good way. You might also say, that's fucked up. What I'm trying to say is, these are fucked up times. Shit's fucked up. It just is. It's as if we're witnessing the ghost of normalcy rather than normalcy itself. It died so fast and it hasn't yet left this plane of existence. And so it lingers, refusing to be banished until an exorcism finally sends it packing. These are abnormal, bizarre, confounding, dipshitted, batshitted, extraordinarily fucked up times. You don't have to be okay with that. You probably shouldn't be okay with that. More to the point, you also don't need to do it all. You don't need to get it all done. You don't need to clean your house from top to bottom. You don't need to homeschool your kids into super geniuses. You don't need to write King fucking Lear or discover a new scientific principle. You don't need to be happy. We're all in mourning from the death of normalcy. We're all knocked off balance. Like someone just kicked your bike as you were riding it. You ended up in the ditch. We're all in the ditch with you. It's okay to just sit here in the ditch for a while and say, fuck. It's okay to wait before you stretch, before you stand up with a groan and see what's broken. It's okay to sit on your couch and gorge bad TV. It's okay to read a shitty book. It's okay to not finish the shitty book. It's okay to let your kids be kids and just tell them they're on spring break right now. You don't need to be an A-plus parent, and they don't need to be A-plus kids, and you don't need to be an A-plus spouse. Christ, you don't even need to be an A-plus human. Aim for B, maybe B-minus, C-plus. Just hold it the fuck together. Forgive it in yourself, and forgive it in those around you, too. Now, that's not to say this is the time to let all the rope slip through your fingers. Your kids need food. You need food, too, and water. Everybody needs things, and this is a crisis. Though a weird feeling, slow-mo crisis, as if we're watching two whales collide underwater with us between them. But you don't need to be a hero. You don't even need to be normal. You need to be you, and go with it. You're allowed to feel all of what you feel. Hell, I don't know what to feel. I keep thinking, yeah, okay, I've been preparing for this my whole life. Time to write a book. A whole book. Here we go. Here we fucking go. And then I just sit there and I'm like, hey, okay, that's not happening yet. And I go to eat and it's mostly just grazing. My kid's like, can I play the Switch? And I'm like, yeah. Hell yeah, it's spring break. Go hog wild, dude. And I tell him to read a book after, and he does. Percy Jackson, the first book, if you must know. But I'm not running him through the ringer. No math flashcards or quizzes. Life is slower right now. And stranger. And I feel this mad pinball bounce of emotions. I go from panic to dread to a weird kind of giddy elation that has no comprehensible logic to it. And then I land on tired, and then I land on sad, and then I land on gratitude, because if all else fails, this has at least made me appreciate things more. God, and then I feel shitty for appreciating things more, because this isn't the time to appreciate anything, is it? Then I feel shitty for feeling shitty, like, well, what's wrong with appreciation? What's wrong with finding joy? Guilt ensues, and then a refutation of guilt, and a weird feeling of relief for the earth, because I've seen photos of dolphins in Italy, and I think back to this line I wrote in my book Wanderers. Humankind was a disease. The earth was the body. Climate change was the fever. And in that fever, in that rising of global temperature, the earth was able to release new defenses. Ugh, and then I just feel bad for writing that. Like, am I the asshole? Probably. And so the drunken carousel of wildly spinning emotions goes on, staffed by octopods, ridden by monkeys, narrated by a short-circuiting robot. I'm not okay. I'm not broken. But I'm definitely, absolutely, unfuckwithably not okay. And I'm going to let that be okay. I hope you will too.
It's Okay, You're Not Okay by Chuck Wendig. Voiced by Katie Williams. Sound design by Veronica Straight-Lingo. Project Outbreak is produced by Pandemic Collective. Production support by Veronica Straight-Lingo and Cinema Sound Theater, Ashley Campbell, Sarah Sachs, and Katie Williams and Katie Williams Design.
For more information, you can go to pandemiccollective.org. Next week, we'll bring you Cycle 2, Code Structure. Until then, stay healthy. Remember, we're in this together.